Okay, so we're going to talk about tzitzis, tefillin, and yarmulkes, and what messages each of these holds for us, what we're supposed to learn from them. So, according to the Mishnah Brura, there are two things that tzitzis are supposed to remind us of. The first is that they're supposed to remind us of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The second is that they're supposed to remind us of the Torah. Other Mefarshim give other things that tzitzis are supposed to remind us of, but these two are mentioned by the Mishnah Brura. How do tzitzis remind us of these things? The Mishnah Brura explains that it has to do with the number of strings, the number of gnats, the number of circuits that the shamash string make around the other seven strings. If you count up the number of gnats on a single corner of your tzitzis, you'll find that there's five pairs of gnats, which obviously correspond to the five chumashim in the Torah. If you count up the number of gnats plus the number of strings, that's eight strings plus five gnats is 13. That's the gematria of the word echad. Aleph is one, ches is eight, one and eight is nine, and then dalet is four, nine and four is 13. And then if you double that, double 13 is 26. So in other words, the front two strings of the tzitzis have between them 16 strings and 10 gnats for a total of 26. That's the gematria of Hashem's name with the four letters Yud and then Hey and then Vav, right, etc. So between the two, right, you've got the gematria of Hashem's name and the gematria of Echad, and so the tzitzis remind us of the words Hashem Echad. The Mishnah Brura gave an interesting mashal to help understand why tzitzis are so special. He said it's as if a king sent an autographed, photo to a person, right? In other words, that the tzitzis are sort of like remind us of Hashem's name, like that autographed photo where the signature, right, is the name of the king. And obviously, if we got a photo like that, we probably would treat it with a lot of, care. I actually had a friend, his name was Sadia, and he did campaigning for George W. Bush way back when he was a teenager, and in appreciation, George W. Bush sent him an autographed photo, and he carried it around in a special, case perhaps even, and he would show it off to people because he was very proud of that. And so the tzitzis are our autographed photo, kaviyachol, from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They're something that we should treat with care, and we should wear with pride. Under what circumstances should one put on tzitzis but not say a bracha? So there's two cases where one would do that. Number one, if for some reason you're putting on a talis after Baruch Sha'amar but before Shmoneh Esrei, so you would not interrupt in order to say the bracha on tzitzis, but rather you would put the talis on without a bracha, and then after Shmoneh Esrei or after Tachnun, you would then say the bracha of Lehis'atif b'tzitzis. A second circumstance where you would put on tzitzis without a bracha is a person who wears a talis during davening. When he puts on the tzitzis under his shirt in the morning, probably should not say a bracha on the small tzitzis, and rather wait until he gets to shul and let the bracha on his talis cover both the tzitzis he put on under his shirt and the talis all at once. According to the Shulchan Aruch, why are there tzitzis strings on each of the four sides of the talis? So the Shulchan Aruch explains that the message of the tzitzis, the reminder about Hashem, is so important that we don't want a person to miss it, even for a moment. So we want to make sure that no matter where he looks, whether he's looking to the right or to the left, whether he's looking in front of him or behind him, we want to make sure that he remembers the message of the tzitzis. That's why the tzitzis are on all four sides of the talis. According to the Ramah, why do people have a custom to kiss their tzitzis. The Ramah explains that when somebody loves something, when he appreciates something, so he'll show that by giving it a kiss. Imagine we talked about somebody who won the lottery. Have you ever seen a picture of the lottery winner kissing the winning ticket? Right? Because he loves it and he appreciates it and it's special to him and he shows that by kissing it. And so we kiss the tzitzis to show that it's something that we love and appreciate and that we treat it as special, or at the very least because we want to love it and appreciate it. And by acting as if we love it, that'll help us actually, you know, acquire the feeling better. What are other things that people do to show that they appreciate the mitzvah of tzitzis? So again, the Ramah here points out that in addition to kissing the tzitzis, people have the minhag to lift the tzitzis up at certain times during Shema, and even perhaps to pass the tzitzis in front of their eyes. Those are three things which the Ramah says are associated with appreciating the tzitzis, kissing them, lifting them up, and putting them in front of the eyes. We said, this is not the Ramah, but we suggested that another reason for putting the tzitzis in front of the eyes is so that we should not look hypocritical when we say the words u'ri'item oto, right, where the Torah tells us to see the tzitzis. Right, we want to connect, right, what the Torah tells us to do with what we're actually doing. And so we put the tzitzis in front of our eyes and look at them to show that we're both studying those instructions and fulfilling them. What are two reasons that we should love mitzvos? So we told a story, the Musar Maisa, about a businessman who was stranded, shipwrecked. He came to an island, and on that island, right, they just use clams, right, as currency. There were so many diamonds there that diamonds were worthless. And, you know, he spent years building up a fortune in clams until he built a ship, packed it full of clams, and finally sailed home. He thought he would be rich, but all he ended up with was a ship full of rotting clams. And then as he was taking off his shoes, a pebble fell out. What was a pebble on the island, but back home it was a really precious diamond. And then he was very distraught, he was very upset, you know, that he had, you know, missed out on the opportunity to really strike it rich by bringing home diamonds instead of clams. And we pointed out that, you know, Olam Hazeh is like the island where we run after clams, we run after comfort and pleasure and honor and wealth and power. But those are all clams. Those are all things which for eternity, for forever, right, in the spiritual world, right, that we're going to spend, you know, the rest of existence in. Those things, power, pleasure, comfort, money, right, respect, those are not the important things, the things that are valuable. In those, you know, the world of Gan Eden and Yemos HaMashiach and Olam Haba, the things that are important is mitzvos, and becoming more perfect and growing closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And so the idea is that the person who really understands the value of a mitzvah, that these are the things that are going to be valuable forever and ever, and not just for, you know, a couple of years that we're here in this world, will definitely appreciate them. The mitzvos are what make us rich. The second reason that some guy suggested, and it was a very good suggestion, is that we're going to spend over the course of our lifetime, we're going to spend thousands and thousands of hours doing mitzvos. You just count up davening. How much, you know, how many hours do you spend a day davening? How many hours do you spend every week? How many hours do you spend every year? Right? Over the course of a lifetime, we're going to spend, right, thousands of hours just davening. And davening is only one out of the 613 mitzvos. And if we don't love it, then those hours are miserable hours. But if we somehow teach ourselves to love davening, we study it properly so that we can appreciate it better, you know, then those hours, instead of being hours of boredom, they transform into hours of enjoyment. And so it's a good investment to work on loving mitzvos, loving davening, loving tzitzis, loving all these other mitzvos, because then if we love them, we'll enjoy every moment that we spend performing them. And that's going to transform what otherwise would be hours of, you know, boredom into hours of enjoyment. So that's a very pragmatic reason why it's a good idea to teach ourselves how to love mitzvos. Moving from tzitzis to tefillin, what foundation of Jewish belief do tefillin remind us of? So here, the Shulchan Aruch points out that the tefillin contain four parshios: Shema, V'haya im Shamoa, Kadesh, and V'haya ki Yiviyacha. And the idea of putting these parshios into the tefillin and putting the tefillin on our head and on our arm is that every time that we put them on and every moment that we wear them and remember that we're wearing them, we also remember the messages that are contained, the themes of those parshas. And so the first of those parshas is Shema. Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad, Hashem is one. And so the tefillin, you know, at the outset, at the beginning of everything, is supposed to remind us of Hashem's oneness, right? Not like the ancient idol worshippers who believed in a pantheon of many gods, right? And not like contemporary, you know, certain Christians who believe in three gods. You know, the tefillin reminds us of that fundamental truth of Judaism, that there's only one God. And Moshe Feinstein makes an interesting point. He says, you know, if you go back, you know, 3,000 years, right, most of the world, 99% of the world, believed in multiple gods. And the Jews were the only ones who believed in one God. And everybody used to, the Jews, you know, they're a small minority. But over the 3,000 years, slowly, you know, the rest of the world has come closer to us. You know, they rejected, you know, pantheon of idols. You know, the Muslims have even rejected the possibility of three gods. And, you know, there's a progression there, a historical progression, that over time, people come closer and closer to appreciating the truth of Judaism. You know, we're there, the rest of the world will eventually get there. They're slowly moving in the right direction. And so the tefillin remind us that Hashem Echad, that Hashem is one. What foundation of Jewish history do tefillin remind us of? So again, in these four parshios, particularly in the parshios of Kadesh and V'haya Ki Yiviyacha, there are descriptions of Yitzias Mitzrayim, that Hashem broke all the rules of nature in order to take us out of Mitzrayim. And he demonstrated clearly, right, to the entire world that he was more powerful than idols, that idols were fake, that only Hashem was real. He demonstrated that he cares about what happens in the world and that he's willing to interfere, right, in the course of human events in order to make sure that world history gets where he wants it to go. And so Yetzias Mitzrayim demonstrates all of that and more. It demonstrates the idea of prophecy and much more than that. And so the tefillin, by, you know, containing the parshios of Yetzias Mitzrayim, they're supposed to remind us of that foundation of Jewish history and of all of the ideas, central ideas of Judaism that Yetzias Mitzrayim attests to. Why do we put tefillin next to the heart and next to the brain? Right? It's supposed to be on the bottom half of the upper half of the arm. It's supposed to be above the hairline, but directly in the center, right, of the skull. And that basically points directly to the heart and to the brain. And the Shulchan Aruch explains that the placement of the tefillin contains a message for us. Namely, that we're supposed to commit and dedicate our brain, all of our thoughts, to the service of Hashem, and our heart and our feelings to the service of Hashem. Right? Many people think that the point of life, right, is to live for pleasure, but that is not a Jewish idea. The Jewish idea says live for perfection, coming closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And so the tefillin on top of the brain and pointing to the heart remind us that our brain should not be occupied with schemes to get rich and not with schemes to get powerful, right, and not with schemes to obtain pleasure, but our brain should be devoted towards HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the same thing about the heart. Our heart, right, shouldn't be set and driving us, right, towards all these other things, but our heart should drive us towards greater levels of perfection and greater levels of closeness to Hashem. So practically what that means is right? That, you know, when we're wearing tefillin, it's a reminder, right, to spend less time enjoying, right, pleasure with big meals of delicious foods, right, and other types of pleasure, and spend more time on worthwhile things, you know, in life, on really becoming more perfect, in terms of our midos, and in terms of our observance of mitzvos, and in terms of our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. According to the Mishnah Brura, what are two reasons to touch tefillin during davening? So the Mishnah Brura explains that the message of the tefillin is so important that we don't want to forget it. We don't want to get distracted from it. And so the minhag became to touch our tefillin whenever we remember them and at particular points during davening, Poseach es yadecha u'maspia l'chol chai ratzon, yotzer or uvori choshech u'se shalom uvori es hakol, when we say u'kshartam lo'os al yadecha v'ayu l'totafos b'ini necha, those are some of the places where people have the minhag to touch their tefillin. And the idea is that we're supposed to remind ourselves constantly of the message of the tefillin. We shouldn't forget about that. And so that's the idea, one idea of why to touch tefillin during davening. The second idea the Mishnah Brura says is perhaps more simple. It's just because the tefillin is supposed to be located, right, in a particular place, right, on the arm and on the head. The knot of the tefillin is supposed to be touching the backs of the tefillin, but it's very easy for the tefillin to become dislodged or misplaced, and so we touch the tefillin to make sure that they're in the proper place, and if they're not, we'll put them back where they belong. What is the literal translation of the words hesech hadas? So literally it means removal of the mind or removal of concentration. It's basically the term that is used in halacha for being distracted from something. And there's two types of hesech hadas that we discussed. The first one is simply being distracted from the message of the tefillin, thinking about, you know, breakfast instead of thinking about, you know, the pursuit of perfection. That's one type of hesech hadas. The second type of hesech hadas that we discussed was getting distracted from treating the tefillin respectfully. And we said that there's four things that are forbidden because of hesech hadas. So, for example, the first type of hesech hadas, right, which means getting distracted from the message that tefillin has for us, in order not to get distracted, we're not supposed to play games while we are wearing our tefillin, whether it's video games or board games. You know, don't put on your tefillin too early if you're planning to play on your phone before davening, because we're not supposed to play games while wearing tefillin. They're very absorbing. Games are very, very absorbing. And while you're playing a game, it's very difficult to also concentrate on the message of the tefillin about diminishing pleasure and, you know, focusing on spirituality, perfection, and closeness to Hashem. The second thing that's forbidden because of Hesech Hadas are jokes, certain types of jokes. Rabbi Yaakov Emden says that a joke which is a mitzvah, like telling a joke to a sick person to cheer him up as part of Bikur Cholim, that's permitted. Jokes that help people appreciate mitzvos, right? Like the mimi that went out about, you know, the Arba Minim, and how the Aravos were in quarantine because they have no taste or smell. Okay, that helps us appreciate and remember a mitzvah better. That's permitted to, you know, to tell or to hear, you know, or look at while wearing tefillin. Jokes which are lightheaded jokes, in other words, jokes that take something serious and make people take it less seriously, those jokes are forbidden when wearing tefillin. And neutral jokes, like what noise, a noisy oyster, a noisy oyster. It's a cute tongue twister. You know, a neutral joke, he says, he's not sure whether you're allowed to tell that type of joke in tefillin or whether you're not allowed to tell that type of joke while wearing tefillin. So he's not sure about the neutral jokes, but lightheaded jokes are definitely forbidden. Mitzvah jokes are definitely permitted. And so that's the second thing, which is forbidden because of Hesech Hadas, joking around. And the third thing that we mentioned is perhaps not so relatable, but crying hysterically. That's not allowed because you might run into the bathroom to wash your face, and it's not respectful to the tefillin to bring them into a bathroom. And the fourth thing that we talked about that's forbidden because of Hesech Hadas is taking a nap in your tefillin, falling asleep. Because again, when a person's asleep, they might pass gas, and that would not be respectful to their tefillin. Moving on from tefillin to yarmulkes, the Shulchan Aruch and the Mishnah Berurah talk about three things that a yarmulke reminds us of. Again, in other sources mention many other things that a yarmulke reminds us of. Nowadays, you know, I remember that somebody one time said a yarmulke reminds us that we're proud to be Jewish. But again, we want to know, what does the Shulchan Aruch say? And what does the Mishnah Berurah say that that a yarmulke reminds us of? And so basically, in brief, the Shulchan Aruch says that a yarmulke is a sign of respect for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Right? A person with an uncovered head, that's a sign of, you know, of arrogance, of gaiva. A person who covers his head, it's a way of showing respect. And so the yarmulke shows respect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Mishnah Berurah adds on that the yarmulke also shows, number one, that we're in awe of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's something which, you know, which shows and increases our Yiras Shamayim. And in addition to that, it also shows that we're humble. It reminds us to be humble, and it's a declaration of humility. Because again, a person, you know, if you put yourself in people's face, you know, that's, you know, show yourself off. That's, you know, very often like an arrogant way of reacting, as opposed to a person, right, who's behaving humbly. He's sort of like, you know, doesn't put himself in people's faces, covers himself up. That might be why the yarmulke is a symbol of humility. So those are the three things that the Shulchan Aruch and the Mishnah Berurah discuss: respect for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Kivod Shemayim, awe of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Yiras Shemayim, and humility, Anava and Hachna'a. The Mishnah Berurah also talks about why anything can count as a kippah except for your own hand. And he says that part of the symbolism of a yarmulke is that I'm not the top of the world. There is something, someone, right, on top of me. And that's the reminder. We put something on top of our head to remind us we're not the top. There's something on top of us. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is on top of us. And so pretty much anything should be able to count as a yarmulke for these purposes, because it's not me. But my own hand can't serve this function because my own hand is part of me. And so putting my hand on top of my head is basically saying, I'm on top of myself. There's still nothing on top of me. It's got to be something that's not me. Somebody else's hand, a sleeve, a glove, right, a tissue, right, a sack, something like that. Again, you know, if a person's stuck in the middle of the night and can't find their yarmulke, so all these other things, you know, should count. But putting your hand on top of your head, you know, to walk, you know, four amos or to make a bracha, that does not count, because we need to remember that we're not the top of the world. There is someone on top of us, and that's the message of the tzitzis, of the tefillin, right, and of the yarmulke.